Hi, and welcome to The Thing About Cotton, a podcast brought to you by the International Cotton Association. We are your hosts, Camille Cluzel
and Emer McDonough. Welcome to this episode where we ask you to suspend reality of what you think you know about cotton as we explode myths with Eric Trachtenberg, the CEO of the ICAC. The International Cotton Advisory Committee, the ICAC, is an association of members of cotton producing, consuming, and trading countries. The committee was formed in 1939, which makes it older than the UN. And the Secretariat was established in 1946. There are 10 members of the Secretariat originating from 7 countries, and the ICAC's mission is to serve the cotton and textile community through promotion, knowledge sharing, innovation, partnerships, and providing a forum for discussion for cotton issues of international significance. Eric Trachtenberg is our guest today, and Eric joined the ICAC as Executive Director in 2023, where he provides strategic leadership to serve the cotton and textile community. Eric has more than 30 years' experience working on agricultural development, international trade, and with international organizations. Before coming to the ICAC, he oversaw more than $700 million in programs to improve food security, support agricultural transformation, and strengthen land productivity at the US Millennium Challenge Corporation. Prior to MMC, Eric counseled Fortune 100 and other corporations, investors and nonprofits in the food and agricultural sector on government issues, international agricultural development, strategic planning, market access, mergers and acquisitions, and political and economic risk issues worldwide. He was part of the private sector delegation to the UN Committee on Food Security for 4 years, and he also co-founded the US-China Agriculture and Food Partnership, which supports the resolution of bilateral trade and investment issues through collaboration. For most of his earlier career, Eric worked as a Foreign Service Officer at the USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service, or the FAS, both in Washington and in key US export markets, including China, Taiwan, and Russia. Eric also speaks Russian and Mandarin. Now, this is a very impressive resume, and it was the edited version. I could have continued for another couple of paragraphs. So, Eric, welcome to The Thing About Cotton, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to join you, and I look forward to having a lively, in-depth conversation about cotton.
Welcome, welcome, Eric. So in all the work that you do with the ICAC and in preparation for this episode, we spoke a lot about all the myths surrounding cotton and all the work that you try to do to debunk some of those myths and to focus on reality, facts, and science. So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit what's, you know, the biggest misconception that you've heard about cotton?
Well, actually, what's interesting is before I started this position, I'd worked in cotton intermittently with the Foreign Agriculture Service, and I heard about the myths about cotton and said, oh, well, we just need to do better. And then I started talking to our chief scientist, Kesav Kranthi, and I started talking to others in the industry. And it turned out 90% of the myths were wrong. There's always some truth, but the myths I heard, oh, it's terrible for the environment, and it's got 20,000 liters of water, you know, for 1 kilogram of fabric. And it's like full of pesticides, and farmers are committing suicide because of cotton and, you know, forced labor. So there were a lot of myths. And the thing is that I wanted to go through each of them and determine whether they're true or not.
I think that's a great idea. I think we better do the myth versus facts, Eric, and throw a few quick fire questions at you for true or false answers. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Cotton uses way too much water to be sustainable.
Well, that's the first myth. When you look at it, cotton uses less than 2% of global irrigation water. You know, as a matter of fact, it's 1.7%. And in fact, 55% of cotton worldwide is used on rain-fed farms without any irrigation. And these farms contribute about 41% of global cotton production. And we're looking at less water-intensive solutions, such as water harvesting or conservation, water-saving irrigation systems. So in fact, if you look at how much water is used in cotton, it's vastly less. It's probably at least an order of magnitude or more or less than the myth says.
And what about the global cropland that it occupies?
It uses only 2.5% of global cropland. And again, what's really important about that is when farmers grow cotton, in many cases, it's their best cash crop. So the second best crop is usually much lower yielding in terms of income. So for example, if you look at the Sahel region of West Africa, if you compare cotton to the next best crop, these poor farmers would be a lot poorer if they didn't grow cotton.
Yeah, and I think that's usually the case where there's no real comparison or understanding of what happens on the ground. I think that's where people don't look at the broader picture of what's happening in those cotton growing areas. We also get accused of, you know, using too much pesticide, or, you know, either by value or volume, but it really isn't as much as what people would think.
It's less than 2%, whether you measure by value or volume. Mm-hmm. 4.8% by value, 4.3% by volume. And again, if you look at what else uses pesticides, if you're looking at field crops or you're looking at fruits and vegetables, they use a lot more.
That was one of the other myths that we heard. Synthetic fibers are more eco-friendly because they use fewer pesticides.
Well, the fact of the matter is you have to compare all the benefits and all the costs. And so if you're looking at these environmental issues, one thing to remember is, strictly speaking, you don't use pesticides in synthetic fiber production. But what do you use and what do you create? And if you look at the entire value chain of how you create synthetic fibers, you're going with naphtha cracking. You're looking at all the steps of creating a synthetic fiber. And then if you're looking at the overall greenhouse impact of fiber production, you need to compare the entire greenhouse emission of production from fiber production to the time it's incorporated into clothing. Cotton emits less than 2 kilograms of carbon dioxide per kilogram. While polyester, that process results in 5 kilograms. And nylon is over 8 kilograms of greenhouse gas. So if you're looking at the overall impact of production, there is no comparison. It definitely favors cotton.
In those numbers that you just gave about the overall emission, do you take into account any potential carbon sequestration for cotton as well, or that's a separate calculation?
Well, when you include everything, basically, the 2 kilograms of carbon dioxide per kilogram includes current practices. But we at ICAC are looking at setting up a system whereby actually cotton production will reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We're using something called biochar, working with bokashi, which is a kind of rapid composting, and something called jivamrit, which are microorganisms, where together, actually, it's net carbon reducing in the atmosphere. So in fact, we're envisioning a world where not only does cotton produce less carbon dioxide than the other fibers, but it actually subtracts carbon dioxide, where the others still add. So these results are really important because ICAC is really focused on rolling out the system that not only improves the planet, but there's another aspect to it. We want to set up a payment for ecosystem services where farmers get paid for carbon. And for smallholder farmers, this could potentially double their income. But on top of it, having a separate stream of income that is completely detached from cotton prices could also actually serve as a price hedge. So you would do three things. You reduce carbon, net carbon. You could double smallholder farmer income, and you could stabilize it.
That's certainly one thing when you look at the, you know, man-made fiber, particularly polyester versus cotton. The cotton practices and the outcomes and life cycle assessments and yields can all be improved. So you can actually improve the impacts of cotton, but you can improve the impact of polyester. You know, that can't be adjusted. You can't use less fossil fuel or, you know, change the process for actually producing it. So I think cotton has got opportunity in that space.
Well, also, you know, again, going back and looking at the overall environmental impacts, you know, then you have to look at end of life. And so at the end of life, let's say you can't recycle the cotton beyond a certain point. It biodegrades. It returns to nature. there are no harmful compounds at the end. Plastics, however, they become these ever smaller microplastics and nanoplastics. And we're learning more about, you know, the science about micro and nanoplastics. And there's a lot of contamination of water, soil, food, people. Actually, the Bremen Cotton Exchange just did a report several weeks ago going into a lot of detail about what this means. You know, we're talking about these particles getting inside our blood vessels and possibly leading to heart attacks. We're talking about very severe damage to the ocean environment. So cotton completely goes away. Within several weeks, you put it in a landfill, it's gone. Microplastics and nanoplastics, they can persist for hundreds of years.
Yeah, and that's quite a terrifying thing. I think we will have to have you back on to talk about microplastics, because it's, you know, there's a huge amount that we have to understand about that in our day-to-day lives, as well as the, you know, obviously our health impacts as well. So, you know, the whole idea that cotton production is harmful to the planet is really a myth.
Well, actually, the opposite is true. And, you know, we at ICAC talk about cotton as a global public good. You know, those of us who are economists say, well, the definition of public good is something that creates positive benefits outside pricing. So we see it as something that's beneficial for the environment because of reduced greenhouse gas emission, and because we're not generating micro nanoplastics. We see it as beneficial to women and to families, because 43% of cotton farmers are women. And when women have more money, they tend to spend more on social things like education and in terms of health care for children. And the third aspect is that it could be a real driver of livelihoods. One of the things we're looking at ICAC is sort of using cotton as a catalyst for the first industrial revolution in parts of Africa. So when you buy cotton, there is much more that you're getting than just the fabric, which is better.
So bearing all of this in mind then, with all the good information about cotton, why do you think that cotton's market share has dropped from 68% to 22% in only two decades?
Well, yeah, we've definitely seen it. I mean, we've seen, like, if we go to 1960 and we go to 2023, fiber demand, textile fiber demand went from 15 million to over 100 million metric tons. That's a 3% increase over the year, over the period of time. And cotton only grew maybe a little over 1%. I think there are some reasons why that's happened. I think the big one is cotton is more expensive than synthetics. And again, it doesn't capture all the positive that cotton does, but it is more expensive. There are also these misconceptions about cotton, which continue to sort of, you know, unfairly plague the sector. But also, cotton is more labor intensive. It's a complex supply chain. You know, I've studied a lot of different agriculture commodities, and I think the value chain for cotton is the most complicated of any commodity I'm aware of. Because you have seed cotton, and then you have ginning, and you have spinning, and then you have weaving in the textiles, then you have cut and sew. So you, all these markets, and they all move independently. Also, some things that have kind of undermined cotton is this trend of fast fashion. It's a natural product. So it's not just polyester where you turn on a switch and you, you know, basically spit out the stuff. It's more complicated. And also there are a lot of quality characteristics. And then finally, there's a sense that cotton isn't competitive in some engineering and functional uses. So there are reasons why the market share has fallen. But I have a kind of a different way of looking at the market share issue, that we've slid down to 21%. And I don't think that narrative really reflects the situation. And what I'm about to say is fairly controversial.
Oh, go ahead.
Some of that market, I don't believe, was ever our market and will ever be our market. So the very cheapest items, the very, very bottom of the market, that was never cotton's market and it would never be our market. Now, it doesn't mean that we need to be...
So you're talking purely fast fashion here.
Yeah, purely fast fashion, the very cheapest items. I think what we should be doing in cotton is really focusing from kind of just above that range, because I do believe there is a premium people are willing to pay, and then up. We don't want to be super exclusive like some other fibers have become, because I don't think that's necessary. But from the medium low range and up, I think that's our market. And so I think that that's where, you know, we at IACAC would really like to work with our partners and really sort of, you know, solidify our position in that part of the market and up.
So Eric, you talk about good ag work. What does that actually mean? And how does the ICAC support this on the ground?
Well, ICAC has been involved in a number of agriculture development projects over the years. We did a project in Burkina Faso. We've done other projects in Africa. I think one of the more recent successes was our recently concluded program in Zambia, where we worked with tens of thousands of farmers and we introduced a virtual reality training system. We launched a cotton app, both of which with GIZ, you know, the German Development Agency. And we use biochar, bokashi, and the microorganisms. And as a result, yields in Zambia doubled. So we're actually in the process of launching a similar program in Cameroon.
What kind of size are you talking here in terms of the sample for this work?
Well, in fact, actually, the program is reaching tens of thousands of farmers. So it's not just some really small pilot project, because sometimes those results can be difficult to reproduce. So we're looking at reaching, you know, 20, 30,000 farmers in Cameroon, reach tens of thousands of farmers in Zambia. So this is really important because we talked earlier about carbon markets, which could double incomes, but also if you increase yields. So between those two effects, you could really transform cotton economics for especially smallholder farmers. In terms of other things that we're doing to help cotton, you know, we also working a lot on, we have an expert panel on social, environmental, and economic performance. We recently released a paper that basically talks about regenerative agriculture. And regenerative agriculture basically is healing the earth, really focusing on soil health, and then eliminating this trade-off between sustainability and yields. If you do regenerative agriculture correctly, you get both. So we're also, we have a network of 2,600 researchers where we're looking to engage with brands. And we're also finally trying to attract more investment into cotton and textile value chains. This idea was originally launched for Africa, but we've seen a lot of our ICAC members interested. And the idea is to have a global cotton textile investment summit to basically, again, bring that first industrial revolution to Africa, but also to strengthen cotton production in all of our 24 member countries.
So the good at work is not just about farming practices, right? It's everything around that, including work with the communities locally, right?
Well, it has to be an entire system. You know, we can't just think of cotton as agriculture, which is why at ICAC, our emphasis now is farm to fashion. So we're working to improve, you know, on-farm yields. Farm income through payment through ecosystem services. We actually have a head of textiles who was originally Pakistan's top textile official. His name is Kanwar Usman. So we have the chief scientist, Dr. Keshav Kranthi, who is a world-renowned cotton scientist. We have a head of textiles. We're working with countries on textile policies. And we're going all the way through to the brands. We have something called Private Sector Advisory Council, where basically we engage with all parts of the cotton value chain. It has to be an entire system. And so if you look at it holistically and you say, well, what is the weakness? What is the part that keeps cotton farmers poor? Or what is the reason why, you know, we could be doing better in the market? By having that whole value chain approach, I think we can be best positioned for success.
So there's a lot of passion that transpires in everything that you talk about and everything that you do. What excites you most about the future of cotton?
Well, I think when you step back and you look at cotton, you know, what are the really fundamental advantages? I talked earlier about the challenges. Number one, it is a natural fiber. It is better for the environment. It's biodegradable. Waste is not a serious problem, especially persistent waste. Also, when you look at cotton, if you step back and you look at, for instance, West Africa, if you have farmers getting a higher price for cotton, you have industrial development. For example, Benin has been a big leader in West Africa. You know, they've developed this industrial zone and they're creating high quality jobs. The turnover in those textile mills is less than 1%, which means these are very, very good jobs. So it could eventually reduce poverty and conflict. Cotton can be a very powerful tool for women's empowerment, with 43% of cotton farmers being women. Also, it's what they call a semi-xerophyte, which means it grows in dry places other crops can't. It's a better product. I like my cotton shirt. It can fight climate change. And so we're looking at cotton as, again, going back to this concept of cotton is truly a global public good. And all of those factors together make it really exciting to be part of the sector.
So, Eric, if listeners could change one thing about how they think about cotton, what should that be?
Well, we think of cotton as a global public good because of livelihoods, effect on women, the environment. We do believe there could be a willingness to pay a premium for products with strong sustainability claims. And so we all need to make the case to brands, to consumers, to civil society, environmental groups, or regulators and others that when you get cotton, you not just get a higher quality product, but you get so much more.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Eric.
Well, thank you. It's great to see you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Wow. Oh, that was a lot of information in that, Cam. I think, you know, it's important that we really challenge the negative bias that exists, that has existed around cotton for years. And I think Eric has given us so much good information backed up by science and looking at those facts and then with what they're doing on the ground. Cotton really has the ability to change a lot of what's happening with the environmental impacts that we're facing at the moment.
Yeah, the ICAC in general and Eric in particular are doing such a fantastic job working with different governments, of course, and trying to make sure that the best practices are applied across the world. But I think what sticks with me is all the work that they're doing about bringing to light the reality and the truth around cotton. And I think that the statistics, obviously the low-hanging fruit and the easy target when it comes to cotton is water usage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But again, I mean, it only uses less than 1.7% of global irrigation water. And if 55% of cotton produced is actually rain-grown, which means it doesn't use any irrigation water, it just depends on rainfall to grow it. That in itself explodes the myth that cotton uses too much water. And even, you know, the global pesticide use that cotton does get, you know, gets a lot of negative press for, it's less than 2% of global pesticide use in farming. So yeah. That they're really strong percentages that I suppose defend how cotton is produced, or at least counteract the myth that cotton is so heavy in water consumption and pesticide use.
Yeah, exactly. And I really highly encourage our listeners to spend some time going on either the ICAC LinkedIn page or website to find more of these statistics in more details, because I think it's fascinating. And I there's one thing we didn't talk about with Eric, but I do want to shine some light on that, is the work that they've been doing on social media as well, what they call the Truth Tuesday, they try to debunk some myths, but also bring some fun facts about cotton. I love those. I read them religiously when they come out. And we thought we'd pick a few Truth Tuesday to just
go for it.
Tease our audience. So the first one that I really like is their post about cotton that can be grown in a number of colors. So obviously the traditional color of cotton is more or less white, but you can find pink cotton in nature.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously the natural colors, you know, the browns and the, you know, the more yellow tones, they're grown. And I know that there are some great U.S. Female farmers, I'm pretty sure in Texas, that are growing some colored cotton as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Another one, obviously, cotton is a crucial ingredient in more food than you might think. Why is that, Imar?
In food? You mean from cottonseed?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the seeds crushed to extract cottonseed oil is present in so many food, right? Food
items. Yeah, and it's
we
also
forget that sometimes.
It's also a stock feed as well. It's a really important stock feed for feeding dairy cattle. So, you know, high protein content, produces really good milk. So, it, you know, it's in this that food supply chain as well.
Exactly. So then one more about cotton use in medical supplies in general. And obviously, when we're not well, whether we're in the hospital, hopefully not, but in other places, we want to feel good. We want to have natural fiber against our skin. But not just that, it's known to be hypoallergenic. It's a really good absorbent of substance. It's perfect for dry surgical fields, performs well under with anti-inflammatories. So yeah. Kudos to cotton on that. And a last one, because it's a fun fact that I liked to pick from there, is the role that cotton played in Thomas Edison's experiment when trying to create light.
Oh, electricity, I had completely forgotten about that one.
Yeah. So cotton apparently on October 19, 1879, Edison ran his first test of his new lamp, and it burned for more than 2 days. And that was thanks to cotton-based filaments that finally burned. Of course, it's been replaced now, but yeah. That was very instrumental. So here's a little fun fact.
Yeah, and I think our audience also might not be aware of the fact that there's cotton in our currency.
That's right. That's right. Well, at least in $100 bills, US dollar bills. In fact, do you know, Imar, how many $100 bills we can make out of one cotton bale? A cotton bale weighs around 480 pounds.
Gee, I'm going to take a stab at that. I'd say maybe, I don't know, $150,000?
Yeah, you can double that.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. You can also make 215 jeans, 250 bed sheets, 400 men's sport shirts, 1,200 pillowcases, over 3,000 diapers. Yeah, and the list goes on. But just to give a bit of perspective.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize how much cotton is actually in the environment around us every day that we use. I mean, it's even in automotive parts. It's in tires. It's in so many things that we use. But I think I would like to bring us back to a little bit one of the conversations, and I know we're going to actually focus on it in a separate episode, is carbon. You know, with the work that the ICAC is doing, using biochar with growers and bokashi and bioenzymes of the soil, and the fact that cotton per kilogram uses just about 2 kilograms, or sorry, emits 2 kilograms of CO2 into the atmosphere, which is way lower than the other man-made fibers. I think polyester is about 5 kilograms of CO2 emitted, and nylon is 8 kilograms of CO2.
And as Eric pointed, there's scope for not emitting, but actually capturing carbon.
Yeah, yeah, we could actually have a positive impact on climate change by improving the farming practices of cotton. I mean, it already happens now. It's less harmful than man-made fiber in its production and its CO2 emissions. So the whole concept that we could do better, but we're actually already doing better than a lot of the fibers being produced. And then it comes back to the fact that cotton really is a global public good.
Absolutely. I really like that concept. And we're going to keep coming back over and over to this notion of global public good in future episodes.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we haven't even talked about the benefits of, again, women cotton farmers, but that's a theme running through a lot of our discussions, isn't it? 43% of cotton farmers are women. So yeah, there's an ongoing theme there. And I think, certainly for me, using this information, and we'd encourage our listeners to go to the ICAC LinkedIn page and look at those Truth Tuesday myth exploding facts. And, you know, don't just dismiss cotton as a negative for the environment. It actually can be a positive. It can help us all to do better.
Great. Thanks so much, Imar, for the conversation today. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it too. Thanks, Cam. And thanks for listening to this episode of The Thing About Cotton. If you want to learn more about today's episode or have other questions about the cotton value chain, feel free to email us at podcast@ica-ltd.org. Don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google. and follow the Women in Cotton group on LinkedIn and Facebook to find out about our upcoming podcast episodes, other events, and to engage with women and men in the industry. Thanks to the International Cotton Association for giving us this platform to deliver the podcast.
Thanks, and see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.